Friends, did you know that the temperature at night can have one of the biggest impacts on your sleep quality? If you often wake up too hot or too cold, I can definitely recommend Miracle Made's bed sheets. Inspired by NASA, Miracle Made uses silver-infused fabrics and makes temperature-regulating bedding so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. In addition to their self-cooling properties for better quality sleep, Miracle Made bedding has awesome self-cleaning properties so you can say goodbye to stale odors. And you'll get the luxurious, super comfortable feel we're all looking for without the ridiculously high price tag. I have to be honest with you guys, I truly love my white Miracle Made sheets. They are so clean, they are so crisp, and they prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. This leaves them to stay cleaner and fresher 3 times as long than other sheets. Most other sheets, they're teeming with little allergy and acne-causing bacteria that you do not want in your bed. So, why don't you just listen to me and go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code thestacks at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it is backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you are not 100% satisfied, you get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks and use the code thestacks to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode and making my bedtime even better. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today I am beyond excited and honored to welcome to The Stacks the one and only Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams is the former minority leader of the Georgia House of Representatives. Stacey is also a highly esteemed politician, lawyer, activist, and author. She just re-released her 2001 novel, The Art of Desire, which is written under her pen name, Selena Montgomery. The Art of Desire is a suspense thriller romance novel centered around a lovely but jaded maid of honor as she faces fresh temptations and imminent danger. It was such an honor to talk with Stacey Abrams about pen names, romance audiences, and the ways that she feels her work as an author has made her a better politician. Don't forget, our September book club pick is Monsters, A Fan's Dilemma by Claire Dieterer, which we will discuss with Brittany Luce on September 27th. Everything we talk about on today's episode of The Stacks can be found in the link in the show notes. If you like what you hear today and you want more of it, join The Stacks Pack at patreon.com/thestacks. It's just $5 a month and it supports this Black woman-run independent podcast. And when you join, you get a bunch of perks like our Discord channel, which is a total joy, bonus episodes, including audio from our tour stops, and our monthly book club meetup, which is full of hot takes and observant insights. So if you love The Stacks, join The Stacks Pack because without folks like you, there is no way that I could make this podcast every single week. To join, head to patreon.com/thestacks. And here's a shout out to our newest members of The Stacks Pack, Holly Barker, Kathleen Flaherty, Carla Benton, Christine Enders, and Trinae Voris. Thank you all so much for joining The Stacks Pack, and thank you to the entire Stacks Pack for being wonderful, bookish humans. Okay, now it is time for my conversation with Stacey Abrams. All right, everyone. I am beyond thrilled to welcome our guest today. It is Stacey Abrams. You may know her as a politician. You may know her as an author. You may know her from her work in voter registration. You may know her from a million things, honestly. Stacey, welcome to The Stacks.
Tracy, thank you for having me.
I know we have a little rhyming name moment going here, which I love. For people who don't know, your brand new book, it's a relaunch of a book from 2001. It's called The Art of Desire. You're relaunching it. It was originally published in your pen name, Selena Montgomery. It is now in both of your names. But for people who don't know anything about the book, in about 30 seconds, will you just tell us a little bit about it?
So The Art of Desire is the story of Alex Walton, who is trying to figure out what to do with herself. She's got a few different divergent interests and is a bit confused about the direction her life is going to take when she runs into the best man at the wedding where she will be maid of honor. He is trying to reset his life after a little bit of a detour when he was held captive. And so they find themselves caught up in intrigue and passion and romance. And it's one of the most fun books I ever got a chance to write.
I love it. Okay, so I guess that's where I want to start. Why re-release this book and why re-release this book now?
I was very privileged in the early 2000s to be one of the first Black women published in romantic suspense. I was published first through Kensington and then through Arabesque, which eventually became Harlequin. But those first three books went out of print. Berkeley came to me a few years ago and said, we'd love to release these titles again, these first three novels that you wrote, Rules of Engagement, The Art of Desire, and Power of Persuasion. Rules of Engagement was released last year, and that was the very first novel I wrote. And in that book, I met Alex Walton, who was the best friend of the main character. And it turns out Alex was so fun and so interesting. She deserved her own book. And so she meets and falls in love with Philip. The reason for re-releasing it with both names is that at the time when I first started writing, I was writing romantic suspense and tax policy.
Okay.
No one wakes up thinking, I can't wait to read a romance novel by Alan Greenspan. You can publish romance under a pseudonym. It's hard to publish tax policy under any name other than your own. And so Selena Montgomery was born. I've always been very open and excited about being a romance novelist, but it was easier for branding purposes to have those two separate names. And now, you know, luckily I've reached a place in my life where everything gets to come together. And so Selena and Stacy are one.
I love that. Do you miss sort of like the anonymity? Because I remember when, you know, when you really hit like the national stage public with your politics and people were like, she also writes in romance novels, and everyone being like, wait, what? It's the same person. Like, do you miss any of that pre Selena and Stacy coming together? Or are you glad to be sort of out of the pen name closet in a sense?
I've always been very open about writing romance because I think it is a fantastic way to connect with readers, to tell fun, interesting, complicated stories, but to do so in a way that feels accessible. And that's how I think about my politics. Politics is about talking about things like tax policy or the complicated narratives around environmental action, but to do it in a way that people find accessible. And so for me, it's always been that I am Selena and Stacy. It's nice to have everyone else in on the story.
Okay. How did you name Selena? I'm always so curious how people come up with their pen names.
So I was sitting at home. It was about 2 a.m. My publisher needed my pen name. We discussed the fact that I had these two identities at the time, and this is just at the advent of Google. And so I had to think about what name would I want, and I was being very presumptive and assuming I'd have to sign it. And I was watching an A&E biography of Elizabeth Montgomery, who played Samantha on Bewitched, and I loved Samantha. I loved Bewitched, and so and Elizabeth Montgomery did one of my favorite episodes of Twilight Zone. So I was like, oh, Montgomery. And then if you remember, her evil cousin on Bewitched was Serena. I didn't like my R's, but I really liked my L's. So Serena became Selena, and I became Selena Montgomery.
I love this.
It's also 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was watching TV. So these things are all of a piece.
But are you happy with the name, or do you think if you did it at like 4 p.m, it would be something different?
I think she became who she needed to be. It was perfect.
And do you think of Selena Montgomery as someone different from you? Like, do you, I know in the introduction to this Art of Desire, you have sort of this, you know, it's like a page and a half, and you sort of say like, so happy for you to come with us, as in you and Selena. So I'm wondering like how you think of her maybe separate from you.
Well, for 20 years, she was a standalone part of my life. People who knew my romance knew Selena Montgomery. They didn't really know who Stacey Abrams was or care that much. And people who knew Stacey Abrams didn't necessarily always know about romance. But as an avid romance reader, we get very connected to our authors. Mm-hmm. And we follow what they write and we will buy it religiously. And so for me, it was important that I protect Selena Montgomery's brand and her ethos in writing. And I hear myself as I say this, like she's a different person. But for me, it's always been that what Selena Montgomery writes is about romance and excitement and adventure and action that Stacey Abrams gets to, you know, play a part. And that now, because both facets of my life have been able to merge, people get to see that. But I don't miss her because right. She's always here. And I will hear from some fans that she's missing a book. There's a third book in a trilogy that I started right before my political career really started to take on more heft. And so I owe them a third book in a trilogy, and I promise I'm going to get it done.
You're going to get it done. Okay. That's a promise. I was just going to ask, I was like, and when is it coming? So as I'm hearing you talk about, you know, Stacey and Selena, I'm sort of hearing like these two different, you know, parts of you, sort of this, maybe the creative side, sort of the adventurous side, and then maybe the more like pragmatic or practical side, you know, coming from this tax background and sort of like, you know, no one wants to read a book from Alan Greenspan, a romance novel from Alan Greenspan, that kind of thing. Do you feel like since I'm a creative person, I sometimes think about like how I can create. And is it easier for you, do you feel like, to create as Selena because it's this place that you've created for yourself that is based in making? Or do you feel like you have that creative freedom as well as Stacey?
I've always been incredibly privileged to have the flexibility to be all of the things. I went to performing arts high school. I was in the traditional part of the high school, but my younger sister wanted to audition and didn't want to go by herself. So I went with her. And it turns out I could act a little bit. And so I was acting and doing lighting design for theater at the same time I was, you know, becoming valedictorian of my high school. And in my mind, those were completely aligned. I was writing for the poetry magazine. And you know, in high school, you're lots of different things.
Right.
I've always refused to let that go. I've never seen the justification for putting aside my creative side in favor of my more pragmatic side. And in fact, I find them mutually reinforcing. I am a better politician because I spend time thinking about how people live their lives and those very quotidian moments of how do you meet someone? How do you find a relationship? How do you navigate thorny questions or just the fact that they're irritating you right now? And I'm a better writer because I get to explore all of these different worldviews that normally you may not encounter. I'm a good entrepreneur because I try things that make no sense and I dive into spaces I'm not supposed to be in. And so, you know, my first novel was about a chemical physicist who falls in love and, you know, has to, you know, navigate an evil, you know, terrorist organization, and her best friend discovers an obelisk that could have the secrets to the universe. And so for me, it's always been that I've given myself permission and was given permission to be all of those things at once. I tease my mother that she said once to me, I think it was when I'm 14 or 15, she said, "You don't want to be a jack of all trades and a master of none." What she meant was pick something or two things and sort of focus. What I heard was try everything. So, you know, much to her chagrin, maybe she's gotten over it now. I heard that to say, if you're going to do it, if you're going to try these different pieces of yourself, if you're going to explore, just make sure you commit to it. Don't be a dilettante who dabbles. If you're going to do it, go all in. And that for me is what Selena does. That's what Stacey does. And that's what we do together.
Yeah, I love that so much. It's a very both and sort of answer, right? I was a theater major, so I just have to know, what were some of the favorite roles you played in high school?
So I did my favorite one was a play called Dolls that was about teenage angst and how we sort of find ourselves. I did lighting design for The Boyfriend, which was so much fun to actually, if it's a musical a lot of folks haven't seen. And then did Oliver, which, you know,
of course,
to this day,
classic.
You break into song and you hear people use throwaway lines from it. And suddenly you're in a Cockney accent that is completely inappropriate.
I could definitely relate to that. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the book. Did you feel like any desire to update the book at all or to change things? Or were there parts of the book when you went back and revisited that felt like cringe all these years later, or that you thought held up surprisingly well?
I think it held up surprisingly well. It's a bit of an evergreen story.
Yeah.
In its way. I mean, she's the bride, she's maid of honor. She's going to pick up the groom, the best man. They have a moment of passion that neither of them expect, but they're also dealing with their own stuff. And what I love about writing romance is making sure that each character is their own person. I sort of push back against the narrative that these are two incomplete people who become complete together. My mind, it should be you are a whole and complete person, complicated, broken, and have some problems, but you're still your own person. And that the person you fall for makes you a better version of yourself. And that for me is evergreen. And the way I wrote The Art of Desire 20 years ago, I mean, I had to update the use of a landline to a cell phone, but there's some anachronisms in there. But by and large, the story remains. It was a story about politics and how fraught our politics are. It's a story about trying to find yourself, which never goes out of style. And it was a conversation about how do you bend who you are, not to make yourself ready for someone else, but to be able to be with someone and navigate their issues, be a partner to who they are. And those themes for me really resonate. And that's a sign to me of a solid writing exercise when the timing of the writing doesn't matter because the story remains. And that's why we go to stories years later and go back and pick them up, because if the writer has done her job, it doesn't matter when we are, because the story remains constant for us.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. And I mean, so many of us revisit books that feel of a time and place, like dated in some ways, and then also not in others. Like there's a part in your book where Philip goes to pick up, you know, Alex from the airport as a favor, and he goes right to the gate. And I was like,
yeah,
when did this book come out again? I'm like, I remember that barely, but I do remember that, like, clearly. And I was like, oh, this book came out at the end of 2001. And so that means that when you wrote it, that was a thing we still did.
Yeah.
Which I just was like, you know, it's like, it's sort of almost like an Easter egg for the audience when you go back to revisit something. When I started podcasting, an online store was truly the furthest thing from my mind. Now I'm selling super cute sweatshirts, tote bags, other bookish swag, and it's so easy. All because I use Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, they have you covered. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system for wherever or whatever you're selling. If you came to the Stax tour and bought merch, that was the in-person POS system. I'm just telling you, I use it. I love it. Turn your casual browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It is 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. In case you don't know, I was an emotional mess when I first saw the Stax merchandise on a listener while out in public. After starting this podcast and building a community, I had to be talked into creating merchandise, and Shopify made it possible. There is a 0% chance I would have merch if Shopify wasn't so easy to use. Did you know Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States? Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/thestacks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/thestacks now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/thestacks. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
How do you feel like romance has changed? Romance writing has changed over the last 22 years. What have you seen as a lover of the genre, as a reader, and also as a creator in the genre?
When I started writing, romantic suspense, especially by Black writers, was not a given. It was I was at the beginning of that becoming a true approach for writers to take. I mean, in the early 2000s, late 99, you had Beverly Jenkins, you had Brenda Jackson, you had a handful of writers, but you could name all of them. And so one fantastic thing is the plethora of writers who cut across demographic differences. Number two, there was a bit of pushback when I first started writing that I wasn't culturally specific enough, that I didn't write in the voice that was expected for a writer who had a Black character. And my mission was to tell stories that were not culturally specific based on someone else's notion of what that means, but that were universal and that we could be anything. And that's why I was so excited that Alex gets to have this very normal concern of, can I be an artist? Can I be a writer? What can I be? And that it wasn't, she wasn't relegated to one corner of the universe because of what the cover said. And that to me is such a leap, especially for romance. Romance for a very long time, and it continues to grapple with, how do we tell universal stories and trust that our audience can believe that a woman can be anything, that a community can do anything. And I think that's the best part about 22 years later. It's still a conversation we're having, but it's not a conversation we're starting.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. It's so true. How do you, speaking of the cover, how did you think about bringing this cover to 2023? Because it's different. It's a totally different look. And the original cover, they're both on it. On this one, it's just Alex. Well, he's in it, but it's not like a lover's embrace. So I'm wondering what the thinking was about that, if you were involved in that process at all.
I lean on the publisher. They gave me a few options, and that was the one that caught my eye. But I think that there is an accessibility that comes when the cover says, you know, pick me up, read me, and then decide if you're going to dive in. Mm-hmm. When I first started writing, there was a group of men who read my books. They called themselves the Brown Paper Bag Club because my very first novel, the guy got sick. His wife gave it to him to read. He's like, I don't read that stuff. And then he read it and he was like, oh my God, this is good. And then he started sharing it with his friends, but he wanted to rip the cover off because he couldn't hand this book to someone else. Mm. And his wife told him, don't you dare. And so he put the book in a brown paper bag and he passed it around to his friends who read my novels. And they would send me notes about and give me feedback. And so I think this is for the Brown Paper Bag Club. They can pick up the book and they don't have to worry about any assumptions being made or cast or, you know, they whatever, you know, machismo may stop them from picking up the book. This mm-hmm. gives them the freedom to do so. Although I think, you know, the Brown Paper Bag still remains one of my favorite stories.
I love that. It's incredible. I feel like there's been such a shift in romance novels towards these like kind of cartoon style covers for a similar reason, I think, like that there's this like, I don't know, embarrassment about reading a book that's easily identified as romance, which, you know, I think is sort of silly, but I also understand. We all get embarrassed about so many different things that I think can be silly, including things I get embarrassed about. So, you know, but I do think that the brown paper bag story is fantastic. And I feel like maybe you need to just make a book that looks like a brown paper bag.
There you go.
it's like Sharpie on a paper bag looking cover. Do you feel like becoming a national figure in politics has changed how you think about yourself as an author or as a storyteller?
My hope is that every experience deepens and broadens how I approach my work. And as a writer, it exposes me to other constructs and different thinking, but it doesn't change the core of how I write, which is that mm-hmm. I want to tell stories that are complicated and yet fun. I love exploring parts of my personality or the personality I wish I had, but also I get to dive into industries and histories that I didn't have. And so each time I write, I get a chance to explore a world I may not get to live in, but for the time I'm writing and every time I open the book, I get to visit again. And that's how I think about the world. I want to explore. I want to be curious. I want to solve problems. I want to do good. And whether it's in my writing or in my thinking or in my work in public service or even as an entrepreneur, it's how do I bring those pieces with me? But Selena Montgomery was the first time I got to publicly do that. When you write a novel, I just finished at Yale Law School. Most of my colleagues did not leave our time at Yale writing romance. I mean, yes, you had a lot of lawyers who wanted
to. Did anybody?
No, I was the only one. Anyway. Everyone else, you know, people talked about becoming John Grisham or doing something else. I became a romance novelist because my initial instinct of writing a spy novel was pushed back by the industry. But I wanted to tell my story. I wanted the very first story to have life. And so I adapted. I, you know, killed all the same people I planned to kill. But I made my characters fall in love. And because of that, my first, you know, Rules of Engagement became a book. And then because of that book, I got to meet Alex and Philip. And because of that, I wrote another one and another one. And 8 novels later, I had built this universe. And it was because I let myself challenge tropes and push back against what I was supposed to be. And that I wasn't embarrassed. I mean, people presume that, as I said earlier, the pseudonym had nothing to do with embarrassment or chagrin. It was about branding and making sure that the people who were going to be the natural audience could find me and wanted to be there with me. And now I'm just excited that because of the re-release, I get to bring new people into the fold.
Yeah, that's me. I'm a new person in the fold.
Welcome.
Happy to be here. I love it here. I'm sort of new-ish to romance since I started doing the podcast, and I've learned so much from so many of my listeners who are like avid romance readers about the rules and about, you know, what does happily ever after really mean? And like, is this a true romance? Is this not? And I love it. I love getting to be in a new space with new rules and new ideas and just like a subculture, right? Like it's fun to be invited in. And so I've really enjoyed kind of trying to take on romance and thinking about it and experiencing it and, you know, pushing my preconceived notions to the side and being like, this is fun or this isn't fun. Like, I don't like this one. And that's okay too. You know, it just, I like it here. So I'm new, but I'm enjoying it.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, part of the joy of romance, and I learned very early on, I would always describe myself as romantic suspense. Because for traditional romance, my novels lean fairly heavily on action. And mm-hmm. I was chastised early on that
I've learned about this from romance readers. Yes, they have strong opinions about this stuff.
So I am always clear. I write romantic suspense. As one of my editors said, she's like, can you make sure they like each other by the end? I'm like, of course they like each other. Yes, yes, yes. But it was, for me, it was writing the romance being absolutely core to the story. But there are different styles. My younger sister, who's also an avid romance reader, she and I have different romantic archetypes that we like. She is much more traditional romance. I'm much more romantic suspense. She's Bridgerton, and I'm, you know, she's Julia Quinn, and I'm Nora Roberts. And so, you know, it's the fun thing is that we can swap novels and swap stories. You know, she's Brenda Jackson and I'm Beverly Jenkins or vice versa. And we get to be all of those things with one another in the same genre, in the same field, with the same authentic love for the writing.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, let's talk about the writing.
Yes.
How do you like to write? How many hours a day? How often? Where are you? Music or no? This part's important. Snacks or beverages? Rituals, candles, like set the scene. How do you do it? Where do you do it?
So when I wrote The Art of Desire, I was already practicing law. I was in a 2-bedroom apartment that I shared with my older sister, and we could not afford much. So I turned the little mini dining room area into my workstation. So I had a table. I listened to this beautiful guitar music by a composer named Nick Thompson, who has gone on to do amazing things in writing, and he's a journalist now, but he had this fantastic CD. And so I would listen to his music and write. I'm a very methodical writer. So I start out with my synopsis. I then do my storyboard. And I lay out I still do this to this day, on note cards, sort of here's each chapter. Because I'm often doing 12 other things, I don't set a time or a date, but what I do, I figure out, here's what I need to get done. And so I will carve out the time it takes to do that note card, to do that chapter. And then I get through it all, I come back. And as I write, my sister, the other romance novel, she edits all of my romance novels. So she would get these books, you know, she'd get these chapters. I don't do as many iterations as I think some writers do, because I'm pretty careful when I write. Mm-hmm. And I don't share it with a lot of people, because I think at a certain point, if it's too communal, you're no longer writing it. You're just curating. And so for me, I have a very singular point of view. I make sure I've hit the pieces I need to hit. I send it to my editor and I wait for them to tell me whether I suck or not.
What about snacks and beverages?
Okay. So I do water or tea.
What kind of tea?
English breakfast tea. I've expanded out. I like black teas. I'm not a green tea person.
I'm a black tea girl too. Do you do sugar and milk in it?
I do sugar. I will do milk if I'm doing a really bitter tea.
Okay.
So if I'm doing an Earl Grey or a really strong black tea, I'll add milk. But most of the time, it's just sugar, me, and a cup of tea.
Love it. Love it. What's a word you can never spell correctly on the first try?
There aren't many, because I...
Are you a fantastic speller?
I wrote a children's book about it. Yes. I actually did spelling bees when I was little. And
oh, yeah.
I love words. So...
Wow. We hate this for us. Okay. We like a bad speller around here. It's not going to be popular with the audience. I'm just letting you know.
Just let them know that I had a traumatic experience in my youth that led me to, a rather, maniacal commitment to spelling right. So,
okay. We will forgive you if you've had a trauma around it.
Origin story.
Okay. We will forgive this. Okay. I ask this to everybody, and I know this is really charged for someone like you, but what comes next?
I will always be in multiple spaces. I am incredibly privileged to be a writer who I have The Art of Desires being re-released, and I thank Berkeley for seeing enough in my stories to tell this one again. And I just had a legal thriller come out, and I've got a children's book that's coming out next year. And so for me, writing is always a piece. But I'm also an entrepreneur, so I'm doing some work with small businesses. I'm working on helping people electrify because climate action is necessary and climate change is real. And we have a chance to, if not turn the tide, then at least stem it. And I'm excited to be working with Rewiring America. And then, yes, I will be involved in politics for the rest of my life. It's not my focus right now, although I'm very excited about some work that I'm doing there. And we've got this little election coming up in 24, and I'll probably I will definitely try to make sure that my guy gets reelected, but I don't know when I will run again. I probably will. In fact, I certainly will stand for office again, but it's not the focus for me right now. And I'm grateful that I can tell these stories. I've got a production company, so I can turn some of them into television and movies when the strike hopefully is resolved in favor of the writers and the actors who deserve to be taken seriously and be able to make a living with what they love. And as a writer who went from making $2,500 for my very first book to being paid a lot more now,
good.
I can appreciate just how important it is that your life's passion, that your creative art is given not only credibility, but value. And so I'm just excited about the fact that I don't have to choose. And Stacey and Selena get to, go into the sunset together.
I love this. Okay, last one. If you could have one person, dead or alive, read this book, who would you want it to be?
I mean, my favorite romance novelist is Nora Roberts. And so she's always going to be the person who, in my mind, if she likes it, I'm golden.
Ugh, I love that so much. Stacey, thank you so much for being here. Everyone, you can get The Art of Desire wherever you get your books. As Stacey mentioned, she's got a lot of other books too. So if you've already read that one, there's others for you out in the world. There's thrillers, there's romantic suspense, there's children's books. So there's a memoir, right? There's a memoir.
They can go to StaceyAbrams.com or StaceyAbramsCreates.com and learn all about all of my sides.
Yeah, and we'll link to everything in the show notes. And Stacey, thank you for being here.
Tracy, this has been a delight. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. And everyone else, we will see you in the stacks. All right, y'all, that does it for us today. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you again to Stacey Abrams for joining the show. I'd also like to thank Tina Joel for helping to make this conversation possible. Remember, the Stacks Book Club pick for September is Monsters, A Fan's Dilemma by Claire Dieterer, which we will be discussing on Wednesday, September 27th with Brittany Luce. If you love the show and you want inside access to it, head to patreon.com/thestacks and join the Stacks Pack. Make sure you're subscribed to the Stacks wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you're listening through Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave us a rating and a review. For more from the Stacks, you can follow us on social media. We're at the Stacks Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, and we're at the Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And of course, check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. This episode of the Stacks was edited by Christian Duenas with production assistance from Lauren Tyree. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegirigis. The Stacks is created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.